Hey, Bonk.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
The sky.
That's a good one. That's a good, you know, you got to save the A material, all right? You don't stop.
For what? Them. This is our podcast. It belongs here.
All right. I hope you can keep up that tone for the entirety of this discussion.
You got it, Daddy-O.
What's happening? What is this?
You told me to keep it up.
You have spent, by the way, the previous 90 seconds before this audio started, just laughing and shaking while crying, basically.
I was trying to hold in my laughter so you can get your precious 10 seconds of silence.
It's room tone. Got to get the room tone.
Well, I'll give you a room tone.
All right. Yeah, you're keeping up. What's that?
It's a black and blue color. You're going to be black and blue when I send you to the moon, buddy boy.
Oh, boy. We did both just wake up from a nap and come straight in here.
I was so cold, and we cuddled, and it was great.
It was real good. You feeling good now? Nice and rested?
Yeah, it's nice to be in a small little pizone when you're feeling chilly, because yeah. It really takes the chill out of my bones.
Yeah, it can be a little bit hot in the summer, but it's actually pretty nice right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm averse to artificial heat, because it dries me out like a dry sponge. Like SpongeBob when he was in Sandy's dome and she was hibernating and they didn't have water and they got really dry.
That's what you're like with artificial heat?
And then they shaved her and wore her fur. Yeah.
I would love SpongeBob if I was a little bit younger. I feel like I was just aged past it. But everything I've seen of it, even just like the name and concept of it, like it's the type of thing where if I had seen as a kid, I would have been like, this is weird and I love it.
It's
you know?
Really weird. He lives in a pineapple under the sea.
He's a sponge with pants on. Yeah.
In one episode, his snail pet interrupts him masturbating to porn, which is just a swaying undersea mushroom. It's really funny.
Okay, that's funny.
We watched an episode together.
We did, and I liked it a lot. Like, every single thing I've ever seen about SpongeBob SquarePants makes me think, this would be extremely my shit.
Now, I can't vouch for newer seasons. When I watched, it was arguably in its peak in the early 2000s.
Back when it was coming out with GameCube games and the like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if it's still good or not, but yeah, it certainly was.
It's not on anymore, I don't think.
I don't know. I'm really not privy to the offering that Nickelodeon currently has.
It seems to me very in the vein of Ren and Stimpy, and Ren and Stimpy was extremely my shit as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. SpongeBob was just like endlessly upbeat and really like dumb.
Yeah.
But like super optimistic, and Patrick Starr is just a lovable dummy.
Yeah. It seems like it's real good.
Yeah, so, it's great.
I would watch more of that sometime with you. But we watched other stuff.
Other animated shows.
It's true. One we have covered, probably our most covered anything here on Panning the Stream. We've covered 3 full seasons of My Hero Academia.
That's right.
And we have now watched 9 episodes, the first 9 episodes of season 4 of My Hero Academia.
That's right, Dan. You ain't lying.
I'm not lying. We're here to talk about it, as we're wont to do on this here program. Do you want to just jump in here?
Well, it seems like you've already made the jump, and now.
Well, if you said no, then if you need to delay or anything, I would acquiesce. What does that word mean?
Is there anything you'd like to address before we proceed?
Regarding the show?
Anything. Anything at all.
I could say that we're coming up on the end of 2020, which has been, well, you know what, we'll save the big end of the year pleasantries for the actual end, but we will be doing the Panny Awards once again to close out the
That's
year.
That's the Panny, not the Panty Awards.
Yes, it is not underwear themed in any way. It is the Panning the Stream Awards, the Pannies, as they're colloquially known. Try to say that word.
Colloquially?
Colloquially?
Is
this my binoculars pamphlet? For the record, we haven't covered it on this podcast, I don't think, but hit it, Buck.
Binoculars plan.
Go ahead.
Binoculars plan.
Try just pamphlet by itself.
Pamphlet.
It looks like you're using every fiber of your being and concentration to say the word pamphlet.
Pamphlet.
Yes. Binoculars. Oh, now you got me doing it. Crap. Binoculars pamphlet. 2 individual words that you struggle with.
Well, at least in life, I doubt I'll ever have to say those two words back to back.
Or even one of those, you know, they don't come up all the time.
Yeah, I mean, in video games, there's a lot of binocular action.
Yeah, you could always say, hey, I'm pulling out my scopes.
My binos.
My binocs, yeah.
Binocs. I like binocs.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, binoculars were way more of a thing. Binoculars? Did I say it right?
Well, cause
binoculars?
You had it right, and then you corrected yourself to make it incorrect.
Oh, I thought you were laughing at the way I said it.
No, I was trying to think of, like, yeah, binoculars. Binoculars were a thing. I remember going to, like,
that's right,
Royals.
Right.
Now I'm just, my brain's breaking. I remember going to, like, Royals games and stuff like that, and you'd bring binoculars.
Why?
To see the action closer.
There weren't big screens to show you.
There were, but the Jumbotron back then.
Would you use them on the screens?
Not really. I mean, you would look all over the place when you had them as a kid, but that was kind of the only time I remember using binoculars.
I thought they were used all the time when I was a kid. I mean, it's like one of those things like, you know, casseroles that you just never hear about anymore. You know what I mean? They were around when you were a kid, and then they're just kind of like,
Like a creepy crawlers thing? Because I don't know if they still make creepy crawlers.
Yeah, sure. I don't know about them, but yeah, sure. Wait, are those the things that you like, there's like a mold? And
yeah, you and you'd make them and you'd eat them.
Oh, yeah.
And they're creepy. They're spiders and worms and stuff. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. But My Hero Academia. So, this season. Any, you want to talk like overarching before, like we're not going to go like beat by beat by episode here, but let's talk about the season in general here.
Yeah, so in the previous season, I guess the most significant thing that happened in the previous season was that All Might was kind of taken out of commission entirely, but so was All For One, like the All Might's kind of archenemy.
Yeah, like kind of, I'd say in the hierarchy of My Hero bad guys, it seems like there's All For One is like the tip top, and he's currently incarcerated, right,
yeah,
after that fight.
Yeah.
And then there is Kimura. Kimura, who's the face hand guy.
Right, and they're all like part of the League of Villains. But so since All Might's been out of out of commission, All For One is in prison, it kind of leaves a hole. Like, who's going to be the top hero to fill All Might's place?
A
who's
going
to be the top villain to fill All For One's place? And that's kind of where we pick up at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and I really like the early stuff they were doing with establishing, like, who's going to fill this in. Because they go in a direction we haven't seen yet, which is, like, the Yakuza. Which is really, really interesting. We learn about Chisaki.
Chisaki, also known as Overhaul. Is his villain name. But I will just say, with respect to the Yakuza, it seems like this guy has a history with like the Yakuza, but like the Chie Hisaikai is not necessarily Yakuza. That's his own kind of like gang that's not...
Got it.
Yeah, has loose Yakuza ties. But
was his dad more traditional Yakuza?
Based on what they said in the most recent episode, it seems like it. And then he just kind of took it for himself and made it into this kind of like drug peddling, organization without any kind of like moral structure or honor.
It's a weird splinter group.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you were playing Yakuza Like a Dragon, so you were fully entrenched in Yakuza lore.
Well, right, I've loved every Yakuza game that I've played. I've played quite a few at this point. But it's so funny looking at the scope of those games, because they never really present the Yakuza as like a criminal organization. It always just seems like a brotherhood of honor, but you get your fingers cut off if you do something wrong.
Yeah, I just remember because Yakuza 0 is the only one I've played through, and I just remember so much of those, like, those three terrifying guys were just like, oh, man, this is, like the honor, like, the code of the Yakuza seems to be a big part of that, you know?
Yeah.
And there's the Tojo clan, like, there's a whole hierarchy. It kind of opened my eyes, if it's even remotely accurate, to, like, just how wide and organized, like, the Yakuza are, you know?
Yeah.
Because I really don't know anything about it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Obviously, I don't know much about it either beyond what the video games have told me.
Yeah.
So it seems to be like a bit of a separate thing. Like, I feel like one of the messages they were saying early in the season was that, you know, in light of quirks appearing, you know, regular, like, traditional criminal organizations have evolved into different things now, because... instead of there being criminals, there's now villains that have superpowers, that have much grander ideas of what they want to do.
Yeah.
And
even like some of the weaponry that gets introduced later on that we'll get to is all about nullifying those superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bad guys are not just like robbing a bank. They're trying to make it so the good guys don't have their powers.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting if you think about like what that implies, like what the implication is when they take their quirks away, and these heroes don't have their abilities. It's like, what do they have? They don't really have anything if they don't have their abilities. They're so dependent on it. I mean,
well, yeah, even like the way they introduce characters or get introduced to themselves is like, oh, here's my quirk. You know, right. Like that's your whole thing is your quirk, basically. And when mm-hmm. that's stripped away, it's just like, oh shit, that's the whole thing. Like this modern society in the show is based on.
Yeah, and that's what I think makes the show so special. We've talked about it many times, but how it kind of pulls the curtain back on characters that you might think are background characters. So you know them by their quirk initially, yeah. But then you learn about them as a person and what their motivations are and what their histories are. Like in this season, we see it with Kirishima. We yeah. see it with, what's his name? Amajiki, who is kind of like, I don't know if he was in the previous seasons.
He's
I don't remember him.
The guy that has that like Chimera hybrid thing where he eats stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. He eats manifests physically. I don't remember him in the previous seasons, but he's a big focus of this season.
Yeah, that's the thing is this season has a lot of focus on new characters, mm-hmm. which I simultaneously like and I think dislike because I just love that cast so much and I feel like so much time has been dedicated to like Todoroki and these characters that we've really come to love. Mm-hmm. And it's like there are things I really like this season about like diving deep into Kirishima on like this last episode we watched, episode 9. Mm-hmm. But also it's kind of like I found myself at a lot of times this season being like, wait, who is Lock and this dragon lady? And then like, but then, you know, I really like some of them, like Fat Gum. Fat Gum is a really interesting character. But yeah. It's like, there were just so many that didn't get like the full big introduction. Where it's like, there are some, like we'll talk about Night Eye and Bubble Girl in a second, who kind of had their own thing. Mm-hmm. But then later on in the stretch of episodes, it's just like, wait, there's a lot of people here. I don't mm-hmm. know who these guys are.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, well, we are seeing the story told mainly through the perspective or through how it affects the students. And these like major heroes like Fat Gum and the Dragoon hero, I forget her name.
Yeah.
You know, they exist with beyond the confines of UA. So, I mean, we know Aizawa really well because he's a teacher at UA. We know All Might obviously really well. Mm-hmm. We know a lot of these people, we get to know Night Eye really well. But like these other peripheral heroes are playing an important role, but we don't necessarily know them as well beyond what their abilities are.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not a work study program. I'm trying to remember. They all get kind of assigned with different heroes to basically just straight up work with them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think they do call it a work study program.
But didn't they do that in like another season?
An internship?
Okay, so an internship. I guess I don't really know the difference.
Yeah, I don't know if this is more like supposed to be like practical than versus the internship, which is more like
learning
behind the scenes, whereas this you're actually going to be put in danger and have to use your abilities because they all have their provisional, or at least the people participating in the work study program have their provisional license, hero's license,
right.
If you remember from a season or two seasons ago. So they're able to actually like do heroic shit and actually be like underlings and you know, sidekicks essentially to these heroes. So
yeah, and I guess before they actually get assigned to Night Eye, who we'll talk about in a second, there's that journalist guy who comes to UA, and his whole thing is like, I'm gonna get the scoop on who All Might's successor mm-hmm. is. And there's some fun stuff there because like he seems really smart. He instantly knows it's Deku. Mm-hmm. But I love that his quirk is that he just sprouts cameras all over his body and then he can like print the photos from his chest.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny. I expected him to be more of a like part of this season because like that's like one of the first things you see is like, oh, yeah. All these people, this newspaper, oh, there's gonna be like season 5 of The Wire. But they were just in the first few episodes.
Yeah, really. It's like when people happen to have a last name or a first name that ends up like being what they do for a living.
Like Shoemaker.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, the earlier part of the season, I thought it was a little weak. Like in previous instances, I've been like invested off the bat. Like I want to see what happens. But especially with that first episode and looking at it like holistically over the 9 or 10 episodes that we've watched, mm-hmm. I feel like it was kind of out of place because I felt like it was mainly just served as like a reminder that like Deku is All Might's successor because the story moves away from that completely. Like in my mind, I feel like the first episode should kind of be a framing device. And maybe we're yet to see that play out and maybe that will come to fruition to some extent with this arc that we're in the middle of. Maybe Deku will save the day or something like that. But yeah, it felt a little random, but you know, obviously we're most invested in Deku's story, and Deku gets a considerable amount of attention in the beginning with his Night Eye stuff, but it's pretty much been about Shiei Hisaikai pretty much like mostly. I mean, I feel like we have an idea of where Deku is and what his internal conflicts are and, you know, how he's managing his shortcomings with not completely being able to use his abilities now. He's using the kick so he can kind of get away with it and not hurt his body. And,
right.
So I feel like we are where we are with Deku, and there needs to be a big thing that will happen for us to kind of go back and into a more Deku-focused storyline, and he needs something to happen to him now.
Yeah, it seems like the big thing with him right now is his relationship with All Might. Because there's the thing where it's like, you know, they basically, Gran Torino sets him up with Night Eye and gets him working with him and Mirio. But there's a scene with him and All Might where we kind of learn some backstory on Night Eye, where I guess All Might let Night Eye be his number two and kind of be the brains of the operation, as he put it. But then after All Might got injured, which I was trying to remember, how exactly did All Might initially, he's got that like gaping thing on his chest that's been around forever.
Yeah, I think it was it a All For One battle?
I think
or something
it was.
Like that?
Yeah, that's right, because I think that played into the, before the fight in season three.
Right.
That's right. And so basically, Night Eye wanted All Might to retire while he was a legend, like go out on top, basically. And Night Eye saw that he's going to die and that it's going to be this super duper gruesome, horrible thing that, like, he's never actually said exactly what it's going to be. His quirk is foresight. So he can, like, take one person once a day and see, like, a vignette out of context. I think that's a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, I don't entirely understand the nature of his quirk yet. Like, I thought it was foresight, like, into the very immediate future. But then obviously he sees these vignettes, as you say, and he's able to know how All Might's going to die. So I don't completely understand that yet.
It seems like he doesn't have a lot of control over it based on what and he's afraid of it. It seems like he doesn't want to do it because it like fucked him up so much when he saw what happens to All Might.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a great quirk to have. It's obviously it's one of those quirks that you're glad someone on your team has it, but you wouldn't want to be burdened with that yourself.
Yeah, that's not a fun one. I wish I had the thing where I could like eat something and turn into it or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's basically this rift also that forms because All Might wants to bestow One For All to Deku.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the part, they're like meeting in the, like a path in the woods, and Deku says to All Might, like, you need to stay alive so I can actually kind of fulfill that promise of like, you need to see me stand there and say I am here, of me actually fulfilling, like becoming the next you. And All Might's like, all right, fuck it. I'm not going to die. I gotta see this, you know. And I love that. I love the idea of this like, oh, it's this foregone conclusion that like he's going to die terribly. He's like, no, I'm going to reject this.
Yeah.
You know?
I also love that like now that All Might is way weaker and he can't be the big burly All Might that we're used to seeing when he like saved when he's actually being a hero.
Yeah.
He uses that so effectively now when he puffs up.
It's like a quick, hey, remember me?
Yeah. It's so effective now. And it's so great. But yeah, All Might's just the best. And I know obviously that his death is inevitable. I feel like, I don't know if it's going to happen this season or what, but that will be hard for me.
Yeah, I feel like this whole show from the very beginning has been about All Might's kind of decline, because like we're introduced to him as like, oh, he's the number one hero, but then we learn, oh, he can only be this for every once in a while because he's really hurt.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, he kind of gave all of his last bits in that All For One fight.
Right.
And so now it's like, yeah, I think that's the logic. You can't keep stretching this out forever.
No.
You know, you can't, oh, he's weak, or oh, now he's in a wheelchair. So, you know, they're not going to do that,
no.
I don't think. So I am anticipating, I don't know if this has happened in the manga, I don't know if this has already happened in the anime or whatever.
And don't let us know if you know.
No. But that moment where, I don't know if it's going to happen at the same time, but there's two things I expect.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where Deku does finally kind of fulfill that destiny
and says,
I am here.
Oh, that's gonna be so
good. And what if it's happening at the same time that like All Might is about to die?
Oh, man.
Like those sound like two incredible moments.
I would be surprised if they do it that way, because I feel like it would, you know, lessen the impact.
Yeah.
Individually, they're so powerful. Together, you wouldn't be able to appreciate any one moment as much.
Those are both like season-ending things of like, oh, it happened.
Yeah.
You know?
And honestly, I know he wants to stick around. I was going to say, I could see Deku doing the I Am Here thing once All Might has passed away, but you reminded me that All Might does want to see that come to fruition.
They really built it up. He's like, no, I have to. You can't. That's why he says you can't die. You have to see me do this thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, that's such an interesting thing that the show does that, like, and granted, I don't consume a lot of superhero media, but, like, I never really heard about a story about, like, the main, like, Superman guy declining and losing his ability to save people. And you know what I mean? Like, that's such an interesting perspective. Like, because they, in the My Hero universe, these superheroes are mortals. They're just people that are going to die. And, you know, people attach all their hopes and dreams onto someone like All Might. But then what happens when he dies? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm certainly not an expert in comic stuff, but I've probably read a little bit more than you have. And like, they've done stuff like that where it's like, you know, Batman's a dude. Mm-hmm. Bruce Wayne's a dude. And like, I've read, I think it was called The Dark Knight Returns, is this really kind of classic one. And he's like this older kind of Clint Eastwood type that's, you know, he's getting kind of more extreme and more pissy and stuff. And yeah, I think that is a cool thing. I know they've had Superman die and stuff. I haven't read a ton of Superman. Mm-hmm. But again, like, Superman's this weird alien. I'm sure he's come back 400 times, you know, whereas, like, Batman ages.
Yeah, he's that's interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen any of that kind of Batman stuff. But yeah, I love that with this show. I mean, it's so, so effective. Like, their relationship is just so perfect.
It is. And it's the backbone of the show, I think, is the Deku and All Might relationship.
Yeah. I was, like, confused about the whole Night Eye wanting Mirio to inherit All Might's powers. Because Mirio, he's already in the top three at UA. Like, he's perfectly capable of being a hero with the ability that he has. Like, everyone thinks permutation or whatever?
Yeah, he can just kind of, like, melt into things.
Yeah, everyone thinks that's so impressive already. So why would he necessarily need All Might's power? Deku was quirkless, you know?
I kind of feel like what they're doing with Mirio is, like, he just seems like such an heir apparent character. He even kind of looks like he's big, he's strong, he's blonde, you know, he's the obvious next in line type. Whereas, like, I think the thing with Deku is he's the underdog, you know, he's the Rocky character,
where
it's like, well, this guy isn't going to, well, he's not the real deal, you know? So I think that's the interesting dynamic between Mirio and Deku.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm just saying, like, you know, I think it would be kind of superfluous to give him an additional quirk on top of his existing cool quirk.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, because Deku, you're right, because he had jack shit, and that was the whole character was like, I don't have a quirk. I'm one of the few that doesn't. Yeah, I see what you mean. Chisaki, am I saying that right? You said it better earlier.
Chie Hisaikai is the name of the organization.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So Chisaki, though, is the main plague mask guy, yeah. There's a really cool intro when he's kind of like confronting the League of Villains. Not really confronting, but like they're both kind of bad guys and they're kind of talking about being bad guys. And Mag is one of, you know, the League of Villains. And Chisaki does this thing where he just like goes by her and swipes his hand and it's just like a blood splatter on the wall.
Explodes.
Yeah, like it's nothing. It's not like at the end of a huge fight. You know, it just walks by and just blood.
Turns it into like a puff of blood.
Yeah, and this show doesn't do like violence that often, like blood, like death and blood. Mm-hmm. And when it does, I love when it's like so effective. Like it caught me, like, whoa, holy crap. Like that really just built Chisaki as this threat to me right away.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I mean, we see confrontations between heroes, even like, you know, heroes between themselves at the school, you know, and between villains. Like we've seen it many times throughout the show, but it rarely takes a limb off or actually kills someone.
Yeah.
Mag
dies violently and Mr. Compress kind of comes after Chisaki and like his arm gets blown off there.
Yeah, which, and he still doesn't have an arm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Chisaki is like, if you just touch him, you like, is that the thing? Any physical contact and you just get decimated?
We haven't seen a ton of his quirk like in practice, but I anticipate we'll see more of it, but it seems that way.
He's a cool villain.
Yeah, he is a cool villain. I feel like he's much more intimidating than Tamura is because Tamura is just like a kid. He feels like a child. He's just like, I just want to be evil for the sake of being evil.
Yes,
like
totally.
He has no motivations.
Yep.
Overhaul is like super, just for that to be his introduction is just super intimidating. It shows like, okay, this is a serious villain. And the fact that a bunch of students are going to come against him is going to be really interesting to see that.
Yeah, totally. There's some fun stuff early on with Night Eye when like they say you got to make him laugh. And it just killed me when Deku tried to do the All Might impersonation. And he's like, they animated them all weird. And it's just such a jarring thing to see that
he,
very
like,
distinct.
He contorts his face.
Yeah. And they did a really funny thing there, too, because like he didn't laugh. Like Night Eye doesn't laugh. But then it turns out it's like, oh, no, I was trying to impersonate his look from the Vinegar River incident when he like saved a bunch of people from this Vinegar River. And it made his like eye like slightly or like, you know what I mean? It was like a wrinkle was slightly off and is showing how much of a like All Might scholar he is. I loved that.
Yeah, that was great.
I don't know what's going on with the tickle machine. Bubble Girl is like,
oh,
Night
that
Eye's
was fucking weird.
Yeah. Night Eye's assistant is this Bubble Girl. And he like puts her in this like thing that like Revolver Ocelot puts Solid Snake into and like tickles her.
Yeah, she wasn't able to make him laugh, so then he like restrains her and tickles her. It's weird.
Very weird, yeah. Kind of a fun part when Night Eye is like, oh, I'm going to use Foresight. There's no way you can touch me. You can't like grab. I forgot what it was. You try to grab this thing.
It's like a stamp or something.
Yeah, totally.
A stamp to stamp his contract.
That's right. And Deku does this thing where he's like bouncing around doing the like full cowling, whatever. Oh, no, he's doing the Gran Torino thing that he taught him. But he specifically didn't step on any of the All Might posters.
Right.
And like Night Eye, like when he notices that, he's like, oh, wait, holy crap. Like, super impressed.
Yeah, they both kind of end up bonding over their reverence for All Might.
Yeah, yeah, which I thought that was some pretty cool early stuff.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But then we kind of get into the crux of what we've seen so far, which is Deku and Mirio are kind of like on the beat because Night Eye sent him out to look for Chisaki.
Mm-hmm.
And they find this girl, Eri?
Yeah, I think Eri.
Yeah, and she's a little girl with like kind of white gray hair, and she just seems traumatized, like shaking, like obviously something bad is going on with this girl. And it turns out Chisaki is like her guardian or something's going on.
They say he's her father.
Right. And Deku and Mirio, I think, are both just like, something's not right here. And both of them, like, all their instincts are like, we need to be here. Something's wrong here.
Right.
But I think Mirio is the one that's like, hold back. Let's wait till we have more information and do this right.
Right. Because this was part of like an ongoing investigation that Night Eye was doing on this guy. And Mirio, having worked with Night Eye for a while now, didn't want to blow the investigation.
Right.
So yeah, he kind of like, you know, it's one of those frustrating things that happens a lot in the show. Not frustrating in a bad way, but frustrating from the perspective of the character where it's like, I just want to be a good guy. And because of law, because of some arbitrary rules or because of this investigation, I can't. And they end up kind of regretting it later. But then they're reminded like, or we, the audience is reminded about how even just seeing them make an effort kind of made her hopeful.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a sweet thing.
Totally. And we can hear their internal monologue and like how seriously they're taking this thing,
right.
You know. And actually, I looked at my notes. I had it wrong earlier. So Mag had tried to attack Chisaki with like a pole and she just like exploded, basically. The part where he decimates someone is right here. It's the dude that allowed Eri to escape.
Right.
And he just walks by and just like no problem at all.
Right.
Yeah, that's that part. So yeah, really, I think there's some really effective stuff early on here, for sure, like establishing the villain.
Oh, one important note I think to mention is that in that very like first introduction scene of Overhaul, one of his henchmen fires this gun at some of Tamura's henchmen that disables their quirk. And that's, you know, how they learn about, or does that happens?
I think that's coming. Yeah, that's coming
that
up
was
here.
Introduced because I vaguely remember that being introduced in that first introduction scene, but I guess I could
it's right after that. It's coming up in the fifth episode we watched here, which is 68 if you're watching it on Hulu. But yeah, this is where all these people get introduced. So they introduce like on the street, like the dragoon hero,
right.
The girl, which is weird because she turns into a dragon. And you pointed out like this dragon has these like heaving breasts.
Yeah, what's up with that?
It's weird. It just looks weird.
It's very strange. I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable.
Because the dragon is still wearing like a top, like that you'd see on like a Tekken character, but it's got like boobs.
Yeah. Why?
Weird.
Yeah.
And we meet Fakum. I think we see a lot of these in the background in like some like meetings and stuff earlier, but here's like a formal introduction.
Right.
Fakum is hilarious to me. He's just shaped like a weird egg. He's this big fat guy. Ska plays when he's on screen sometimes. And he just absorbs punishment, which we think that's kind of the extent of it until a little bit later.
Right.
And then, yeah, old clam hands here. Tamiki, right?
Amajiki?
Is that it? Why did they write down Tamiki? Maybe it's his last name or something?
Yeah, they refer to him as Zamajiki.
Okay, the Sun Eater.
Yes.
Yes.
Very cool name. Kind of a weird quirk.
Yeah, where he just eats stuff. And, like, if he eats, like, an octopus, he can have a big octopus arm.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he has, like, clams or oysters, he can have shields. Is it all seafood-based?
He has the, like, chicken legs, the talons or whatever.
Right. Yeah. He's just a weird mishmash character.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a character, like, if I was trying to come up with superheroes when I was, like, 7, this is something I would draw. Like, no, oh, he eats peanut butter sandwich and then he can shoot peanut butter out of his eyes or something. Yeah, that's a bad example. I was a dumb kid. So this is when the guy in the crowd shoots the dart. So he's just some random up to something villain here.
Right.
And he's got just a pistol. It doesn't look like a weird, you know, like dumb lasers, you know, comic book gun or something. It's just a pistol that shoots a dart. And that's the thing that makes quirks go away.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing, that whatever causes that to happen, turns out to be a really big part of why or what Shisaki is doing and why he needs to be stopped and airy.
Right, yeah. They find the bullet after this conflict, which, by the way, we get a nice little scene with, what's his name, Red Riot, Ichiro, the rock skin guy. He gets to be heroic, and he ends up being a focus of a later episode.
Yeah, he does the Red Riot Unbreakable and the Red Gauntlet. Yeah. And there's nothing I love more than just, like, when somebody unleashes a big attack we've never seen, and they scream the name of it.
Yeah.
It's like when James Brown would yell the name of an instrument before he's like, horns! And then horns happen. Like, I love that. I'm always the sucker for that. It's like summoning something. You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, he gets his moment in the sun there. It's pretty cool.
Well, it's cool, too, because the guy that shot the dart, he injects himself in the neck. Real Fox Die moment here. And it's basically just, like, steroids for his quirk.
Right.
And, like, all of a sudden, these blades, like, there's some really cool animations here of the blade, like, waves of blades coming out of this guy. He's, like, crawling around with these blades. And it's awesome.
Yeah. So, in this scene, we learn about, like, two new kind of, I guess, drugs that Chieha Sakai is peddling, which is this quark steroid, and then these bullets that temporarily disable someone else's quark, and obviously these bullets fired, and the good guys get a hold of it, and it's found that it contains, like, human blood cells.
Yeah, and it actually damages, like, it doesn't just disable it like Eraserhead, it actually just, like, does damage to the, like, quark cells or whatever.
Right, right. So they figure out that, like, well, they put together somehow that the blood must belong to Eri, so she must have a quark that's similar in some capacity to Aizawa's, where she can disable people's quarks.
And then this is really effective stuff for a villain here. Like, what he's doing is he's, like, harvesting his daughter's blood and turning them into bullets, which is some real evil dude shit.
Yeah.
And whenever they talk about it, they show this art. It's just the still drawing of this, like, you know what I'm talking about? It looks like a Doom cover. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's just this huge, like blood thing and him looking over her like this demon.
Right.
It's there's some cool art in the show.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love when they change, like, a different art style for a second.
Yes.
It's very cool when they do that.
I love it when they do it when they're, like, putting a plan together where it's like, okay, and then this team, move in here, and, like, blinking arrow.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's always, like, a fun animation and stuff. Or explaining a quirk.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there was a really kind of low-key, awesome scene here where they're at the cafeteria at UA, and Deku is just, like, staring at a bowl of his lunch, and he's just, we kind of hear his inner monologue, and he's just so fucking stressed over, like, there's so much going on right now.
And he can't talk about any of it.
Yeah, and he just breaks down. You know, he's, like, thinking about All Might, he's thinking about what's going on with the Shisaki guy, he's thinking about, like, the stress of, like, you know, this work study and all this stuff, and he just breaks down, and, like, all of his friends are there. Like,
yeah, there's a sweet Ida moment.
Yeah, it's, like, kind of the only time we've seen Ida in these 9 episodes, but him just being, like, kind of repeating what he had said to him when Ida was having a rough time a couple seasons ago. I was just like, hey, I'm your friend. I'm here for you. You know, that's the sentiment. But I just thought, like, what a cool little scene. It didn't do anything to, like, necessarily advance the plot. It just kind of gave us this real human moment of Deku just being like, God, I can't even think straight.
Because these people, like I said earlier, like, they're ultimately human beings, and they're, you know, having to deal with these matters of life and death, in this case involving a young girl, like a you know, vulnerable child.
Yeah.
And it also weighs on him that he wasn't able to save her initially. And the fact that it's like a highly confidential thing that just the students in the work study are doing and the heroes, so he can't talk about it with his peers.
Yeah.
It's a lot weighing on him.
Yeah. Yeah, this show, you know, it's funny because, like, during a lot of the stretch of episodes, like, I didn't dislike any of it, but there were things where I was like, man, I don't know who some of these characters are, you know. But, like, as we talk about it, it's just like, man, this is still so well done.
Yeah.
Even if this is a stretch of episodes that maybe I wasn't as hot on as some other ones, there's so much happening and they're doing it so well in this show.
This show, I feel like more than, like, a lot of anime I've seen, has such a, like, palette of emotions.
Yeah.
The fact that it shows you, I remember distinctly, what is the name of the student who can, like, manifest objects, the creation ability?
Momo?
Momo. Like, yeah. When that episode happened where she was taking that test and you just see, like, because all we knew from before this pretty much was that she was, like, one of the few students that got in through recommendation. So she was, like, very capable. She was very confident, had this, like, really useful quirk. But then it just showed how, like, conflicted she was and how scared she was of failure and how, you know, how she didn't had confidence issues. And it's just like superhuman, like not superhuman,
yeah,
like,
I know,
really human moment. And that's it. Like, I feel like so many of the characters get that treatment. My expectations for the show has been, like, surpassed and subverted, like, every step of the way.
Yeah, it's like, it does, you know, high action incredibly well. Like, look at that, like, All Might, All for One fight. Like, just as climactic as anything you could imagine.
Right.
It does comedy really well. It, like, genuinely makes me laugh a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also got, like you said, these really human moments of just like, oh, man, they didn't need to go into this much detail just to make this character more three-dimensional, but they do. And, you know, we're not experts on anime by any means, but, like, you know, we've seen a lot of Dragon Ball. And, like, Dragon Ball does big, dumb, fun action scenes and stuff like that. And there can be some, like, goofy, funny stuff that happens too, but I don't feel you get as much, like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever said. It's like, I don't feel like I really know Goku. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's got the kind of, like, story of, like, oh, get stronger, save the world, you know, but, like...
Well, yeah, it's impossible to compare the two shows. I mean, and also, you know, Dragon Ball, I feel like that was such an early, early show that, you know, there wasn't a show like that at that time.
Right.
Yeah, it's never lost on us. Like, it's always reminding us that the main characters in this show are children, you know what I mean? And they're still struggling with, you know, the weight of, like, they're in the future having to be responsible for saving humanity and they're saving a lot of innocent lives, at least.
So. Yeah, and I think that's it's the title of the show is, like, My Hero Academia. It's not like, they're not the Avengers. Right. You know, these aren't guys that are like, and I wonder how long, you know, some anime goes for decades. I wonder if the show keeps continuing. Like, you kind of have to do that next step.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, oh, you can't be Maggie's a baby forever. You know, it's not that type of show.
Yeah.
You know?
I hope it's not something like Case Closed where it goes on for, like, thousands of episodes. You know, I feel like it's the best when a show knows when to stop and when to, like, actually have a nice conclusion.
Yeah, like we'll Breaking Bad or something where it's like, hey, we're going to end the story.
More recently, I thought The Good Place is a good example of that as well. That show was hilarious. It could have gone on forever, but they knew when to stop. So.
That's an important thing, I think. So before we get to the final, like, action blowout thing here, they do a flashback to Kirishima that we referred to, and I just love that there is a bear-type character whose quirk is they can turn leaves into money. That's the quirk. Which, hell, I'd take that quirk. That sounds great. There's leaves everywhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of leaves. But didn't it say it wasn't paper money? It was just, like, coins?
Yeah, but, I mean, there's a lot of leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But coins are heavy.
You know what? You make a good point. I would still take that quirk over no quirk.
Well, sure.
Yeah. But the last thing is they kind of find where the headquarters is, or at least where they're hiding out, like Shisaki. And yeah, this is where it's just like, oh, here's a bunch of, like, henchmen and stuff. Like, there's this weird scarecrow looking dude. There's this guy with gems all over. And it seems like they keep referring to Shisaki finding them in the trash. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just in the gutter, or, like, one of them referred to, like, being suicidal and stuff. And Shisaki kind of became this, like, almost cult leader type thing of, like, oh, come under my wing and all.
Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah,
that's what he calls him.
Yeah, that's right. And so, yeah, the last couple episodes we've seen are pretty much, like, the good guys trying to invade this thing. And, like, one of the bad guys, Mimic, who's this, like, weird little bird guy who can, like, turn into things or get huge. He, like, turns into the walls of the headquarters and creates, like, a maze. It's a real weird thing going on here.
Yeah, it's wacky. Yeah, it... You know, another example of what we're talking about, how it does try to humanize the villains. Like, these are people that were at the end of their rope and didn't have anything else to live for, like, literally the one was suicidal.
Yeah.
after his girlfriend went away with all his money or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of explains why they have this allegiance to Chisaki.
Yeah, they're not just like foot soldiers where it's just like, we're bad guys.
It doesn't excuse their behavior, but, they have nothing to live for essentially. So it's like, well, why not?
It's always the show just taking that one step further just to give you a little more context into a character instead of just being like, we're the henchmen.
Right.
You know, and I think it does that so well. Some good fights going on there. I really like the part where it's the two shields versus the shield and the spear where the bad guys are like, oh, these are just two defensive guys. It's Fat Gum who can take a ton of punches and it's Kirishima who just turns hard, you know, like we'll kick their ass. I'm like, it's like this one ninja guy who can create a bubble. And then what was the other guy?
What was it? He was a punchy guy.
Yeah, he called himself the spear. He was the more aggressive one. I forget what his actual... Oh, he had like a weird killer whale face.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was more of like an attack-focused guy. But cool moment where... I love it when we don't know what someone's full power is, and then there's the whole, like, I'm going to explain to you what my power is and what I'm about to do with it. And Fat Gum does that, where he's like, oh, you think I've just been taking these punches. But no, we get this, like, not diagram, but we get to see, like, a thermal vision of, like, all the energy inside him. He's like, now I'm going to punch you with it, and it's burnt off my fat and all that. And so he gets skinny, and then he's, like, super strong, and he punches through this impenetrable bubble and, like, sends him into the wall. And it's like, oh, man, just the... The things they do with quirks in the show and characters, there's just so much variety in the looks of the characters, the personalities, the powers. And it's like there have been superhero stories forever, but I feel like we've seen the same type of one so many times where it's like, I shoot these lasers, I do this thing. You know?
When we first started watching the show, I'd be so confused about like, why does this character look like a big bird? And what how do you explain this? But now it's just like, well, yeah, they just have free reign to create whatever, you know, the creators of the show or the manga or whatever. They can make whatever they want in this universe. Like anything goes. Like you could have a little bird, a little bear that turns leaves into money. Like you can have whatever you want.
Could have a man that looks like frowning concrete.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. Also, we learn randomly here that Mirio's got a Bayonetta, like, hair costume. Like, his costume's made out of hair. They're just kind of like, that was a quick aside. And I was like, wait, what? It's
well,
a Bayonetta
yeah,
situation?
If he didn't, then he would be naked every time he went through a wall.
Oh, that's right, because
it has to be, like, his biological material.
They did a naked thing with him once before, right? Yeah, that's right. Because we kind of got introduced to him early on, or late in last season.
I remember his introduction, for sure.
Yeah, it's been a while since we did season three, but... yeah, it comes back to you how good the show is.
For sure.
And I feel like, you know, we cut it off at 9 episodes here, but I feel like we're still kind of like in the midst of this arc. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's definitely going to be some more to go as they go through this labyrinth and try to get to Chisaki.
Mm-hmm.
But,
for sure.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to be watching this again.
Good show. I'm into it.
Yes. Well, now's the time where we want to thank everyone who is a patron of Painting the Stream. That is on patreon.com/paintingthestream. We do a few little benefits for you there. If you throw us $5 a month, we keep it real simple. It's ad-free episodes of the podcast. You get the podcast early. You get it on Saturday instead of Sunday. You get access to our Discord that we share with the Twitch community. And most importantly, folks, you get For You, written for you by Bonk. A Bonk who?
That's right, Daniel.
Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do.
Who do we got?
We have... I mean, of course, it's our dear friend, Michael.
Oh, that Michael?
Yeah, of course it's Michael.
Michael, hello, sir.
Michael, I hope you're out there listening to us. I hope you have a big old smile on your cutie pie little face. And this Bonku is for you. Follow the dirt trail to the center of the woods. Michael is waiting.
Oh, are we, like, selling something? Or are we, is he going to kill us? Oh, okay. Well,
that's for you to find out, my friend.
Well, Michael knows. Michael, thank you very much for becoming a patron, and look forward to hanging out sometime. all right. So we always do a Hugh question.
Hugh King.
That's right. Hugh King. At the end of each episode. And this one here is, should advertising to children be prohibited?
Hell no.
No way. No chance in hell.
How are they supposed to know about all the cool shit that's out there?
And have great nostalgia for all those commercials for toys and everything. Like, I almost have, like, more fond feelings for the commercials that I saw a billion times on Nickelodeon than I do the actual shows.
I mean, all those, like, Nerf guns, all, like, the new Barbies.
The Turtles, like, Technodromes and everything.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal bars. Like, all the cereal commercials. Come on.
Any video game commercial. Any of that stuff. We've literally just, like, put on, like, giant, like, hours-long montages of, like, 90s commercials or whatever.
What video game commercial do you remember the most clearly? Can I answer first?
Yeah.
GTA Vice City with Flight of Seagulls.
Yeah, I watched that. That was one of those things where I downloaded it from like IGN and, you know, it took forever to download, but yeah. I watched it. He's got a sword. Oh, yeah. My God, the motorcycles.
I just remember the awesome vibe of that. And obviously the song is just like inextricable in my mind.
But then you heathen, you play the game and you listen to your own soundtracks instead of perhaps the greatest soundtrack in video game history.
But listen, whenever I hear those songs, because I still listen to those songs, I'm reminded of Vice City.
That's a good point.
And at the time, I didn't know, like, oh, everyone says this is a really good soundtrack, so I should listen to it. You know, I just thought it the cool novelty of being able to save my own playlist in the Xbox where I was playing it and drive around listening to my favorite songs was neat. So,
yep. I did that with Burnout all the time. The first one that comes to mind for me is the Smash Brothers commercial where it was a bunch of people in like mascot costumes of like Mario, Yoshi, and, you know, Luigi and all that. And they were like skipping through a field and it was like, imagine me and you and me so happy together. And then they all started beating the shit out of each other.
I think I vaguely remember that as well.
Yeah, they used to play it a lot. I also like the old Crash Bandicoot ones where it was just a dude in a giant suit. Those are pretty classic.
What was the ones where it was like, oh, fuck. What was the name of it? It was like these two looked like two lovable characters, but it was like a sexually charged commercial.
It's a video game?
It was not Ratchet and Clank. it was some kind of duo like that, though.
Huh.
People are probably screaming.
Let us know that we got a painting the stream channel.
No, come on,
on Discord.
You know what it is. It's like it's a little racy. It was like,
was it a kids game?
No, it was like had an edge to it. It always had like racy names of the name of the game. Was like,
the game itself was racy?
Yeah, I think so. It always had like
Fear Effect?
No, it had these two little lovable things, two little lovable mascot.
But it was
guys.
Racy? I mean, yeah, Ratchet and Clank always had plays on like Up Your Arsenal and Going Commando. Like,
well, maybe that's what it was, but it was like, I remember it was like a squirrel thing in bed with
Jack
some
and Daxter?
It was a squirrel or something
Conker?
Like
Conker's
that.
Conker's Bad Fur Day?
Yes, oh, yes. Okay. In a bed with a woman and there's something with an alarm clock. Yeah,
that definitely sounds like Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Yeah,
yes, that makes a lot more sense than Ratchet. Yeah. Like, wait, did Ratchet fuck Clank? It's a robot.
No, I just knew it was a lovable icon. That's all I remembered.
But... Oh, yeah, that was the whole gimmick of Conker. Is that like, oh, it's like a cutesy 3D platformer, but he's peeing on things and getting drunk.
Yeah.
I'll tell a quick story about this. So EGM, I was obsessively reading game magazines growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And they would always do an April Fool's Day thing where it's like, and I always fell for it. It was like, here's the code to like unlock every Bond in GoldenEye where it's like you can play as Sean Connery and all that. It's like, oh my God, I got to do this. But it was fake. Or, oh, here's how to unlock Sonic in Smash Brothers, which was fake at the time, but it became real.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one year where I distinctly remember bringing an EGM to class and I was reading it. And it was like, this game called Conker's 12 Tales, which was supposed to be like this rare kind of 3D platformer. And it was originally planned and previewed as this really cutesy thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, they changed it. It's now called Conker's Bad Fur Day. And in the preview we saw, he's hitting this boss's testicles with a frying pan and getting drunk and peeing on demons. And I remember being like, what? That can't happen. And then I flipped to the front and I saw it was the April issue. And I was like, guys, that's a little too obvious of a April Fool's joke this year. And then like a couple months later, they ran a preview and I was like, wait, it really is that? Are you kidding me?
That's so funny.
That blew me away. Yeah. Love the game too. That's going to be it. Thanks everyone for listening.
See ya, folks. Was that too loud? I'm sorry.
No.
For hurting your
save that. Save that energy because I want to tell folks, follow us at Pan the Stream. You can, give us the 5 stars on the Apple Podcast.
Please do.
If you feel so inclined, thank you so much. We love doing this podcast each and every week for you. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thank you, brother.
I think we've hit all the bases, Bonk. Thank you to you each
Thank
and every
you.
Week for
Thank
sitting
you for
in
your
this zone.
Cutie pie face and for your wonderful voice and for your big old eyeballs.
Razor, can you believe this?
And your lovely heart and your wonderful soul and your amazing cuddles.
You're going to make Razor throw up. Look at this poor guy.
He's so cute.
Monk, I love you. It's always fun to do this with you. Thanks to everyone listening. And we'll be back with more My Hero Academia next week.
Bye.